Sheriff, this is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic!
I'm Steve Benson.
And I'm Paul Schultz.
And this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Sit back, relax, and ignore the news, because nothing you're about to hear is true. Welcome to the show, everybody. We're glad to have you. Thanks for listening to another fun-filled week. Last week was one of those rare shows where we just kind of brought everything. It was, we didn't know what we were going to talk about. So we're like, well, let's just do all the stuff we used to do.
Yes. It's like every guitar solo in a rock concert, you know, it's a well rehearsed chaos.
Do you feel like I do? Wait, it's like. You know what? What are the odds that two really famous guitar players who I don't really care that much for would have names that sound so much alike?
Right.
Eric Clapton, Peter Frampton. Really? Come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Two-syllable first name.
I preferred Peter Frampton when he was in Humble Pie.
Oh, is that the one? Is that the one like... Anyway, wow, the show's off to a great start this week.
They'll never know.
So every time I hear that song, like on the radio or whatever, that Peter Frampton song, the first time I ever heard it, I thought, wow, that's really cool. That's pretty neat. Is he making his guitar talk, or is he singing into the microphone and somebody's doing something with the audio? I have no idea, but it sounds cool, right? The second time I heard it, I was like, oh, that song. Yeah. Third time I heard it, I was like, oh, I've heard this already. Yeah. Fourth time I heard it, I was like, turn that shit down.
Right?
And now when you, like, people like hear it, they go absolutely crazy. They're like, oh yeah, that song. Woo! It's like, dude, it's not that great.
Did you ever see that episode of The Simpsons where Peter Frampton was on there and he was like, he was doing like this concert like in the back of like The Simpsons' backyard, and he's like, do you feel? And he's like hitting a wow pedal, and then the big floating pig pops out of the cannon and it like floats away, and they're like, I just got that at Pink Floyd's garage sale.
I like that. So this week we're going to talk about Peter Frampton the entire show. That's all we got. We're going to go through his days at Humble Pie, straight through when he was the guitar player in the Guess Who. Wait, I don't know what all he did, but we're going to go through his entire discography. No, seriously, we're gonna talk about nonsense for a few minutes, and then in no particular order, we're going to do headlines again because we had fun. It's like an old nostalgic thing, right? Mm. Paul has introduced his child to Pootie Tang.
That's right. The gauntlet. Oh, wait. The baton has been passed.
Yes. No nerd podcast can record today without talking about two things. One, Pi Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a few things I want to say about Pi Day. Two, the passing into the other unknown dimension of our good friend Stephen Hawking, who we talk about all the time on this show. Mm. No, wait. That's Neil deGrasse Tyson I was thinking of. He did not die.
No. But they were friends.
I think they were buddies.
They were buddies, yeah.
How can they not be buddies, right? Even if they weren't, they had to pretend to be. Because everybody assumes, like... Say, you're both physicists. You must be friends.
But the two smart kids gotta hang out with each other, you know.
Right?
You have a smart
date.
Were
we in high school at Rogers, the white school, not Krieger, the black school, the smartest kids in school actually didn't really care for each other that much.
No, not really. They were too busy trying to outsmart each other.
Exactly. Exactly. So we'll talk about that. We both have seen the latest Black Lightning, so we might get to that. I don't know. I think that's a lot.
I'm sure something else is going to creep up.
Yeah. Speaking of creeps, Superfan James pointed out that we lost both our feminist and our ultra right wing audience in the first 20 minutes of last week's show.
That's why my response was nothing you heard was true.
Yeah. It's like we got no more far left or far right listeners.
Our listeners are just far out.
Mm-hmm. All right. First of all, 3.14159. That's all I got. That's all you really need. And I looked it up one time because I might have mentioned this on the show before. I looked it up because, you know, people get crazy about memorizing a long string of digits of pi, right? My friend in Chicago has the nickname Pi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he got that nickname from my friend Anthro, whose name is Ann, because she gives everybody a nickname. I didn't get a nickname from her until she had kids, and they tried to say Steve, but it came out Steve.
Steve?
Yeah. So my nickname, finally I got a nickname after like 12 years of knowing her. Steve. But
Steve
but
sounds like a medical procedure.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, I had a Steve put in.
We're going to have to place a Steve. Oh, man. A Steve. It's, don't worry. It's out. Know, these things. It's not like the old days.
It's outpatient. Yeah.
I do 2,000 of these a day. It's like, really? Am I the 1,985th or am I the third?
You don't want to be the first one or the last one. That's all you care about.
True. True. Anyway, so when Anthro first met Pi, whose name is Joe Schwartz.
Oh, okay. I know Joe. I've met him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah. I miss him. He's not a social media guy, which means I have no interaction with him. I should start a podcast with him. That's how I keep in touch with people. I do podcasts with him. Anyway, right. So when she first met him, like, you know, they were alone in a room, mm-hmm. and it's like, just what do you talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, so what was high school like for you? Blah, 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 whatever. And he's like, well, I had this one friend who we both were into, like, memorizing digits of pi, right? And she's like, oh, cool. How'd that go? He's like, well, we kind of got in a competition. She said, did you win? He's like, well, my friend was the sprint champion, but I held the long distance record. So he knew 100 digits of pi. And so she nicknamed it Pi. I remember being at Summerfest in Milwaukee one year, and some nerd had a shirt, and on the back of it was Pi to like 50 digits. Mm-hmm. Right. So Pi motions to me and walks over, and he's like, stands. So the guy's got his back to us. Mm-hmm. Pi goes and stands with his back to that guy, but I'm facing both Pi and that guy's back. And Pi just starts going 3.1518, whatever, 1586, whatever. Mm-hmm. He just starts going, and like, he just recites the entire shirt without looking at it. I was like, it's not like I didn't believe you, but that was impressive to watch.
I'm not even mad. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
The thing about, you know, International Pi Day or March 14th or whatever you want to call it, the thing about it is that's the one day your everyone becomes a mathematician. You know, yeah. Everyone. And it's like, do you even know? Or do you just like the little symbol? Or you like the fact that it's pi? You know, what is it about Pi Day that makes people crazy? Is it just Is there like a drinking thing? Is it like Dingus Day?
Okay, so now you're getting at the thing I wanted to say about it.
Okay.
Which is this. I think this year was the first year that I had this attitude toward it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when somebody first pointed out Pi Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, when you find out Washington, D.C. is not in the state of Washington. It's like, oh, my God, mind blown.
That's
right.
Right.
And then so I was like really excited about it. I'd send my friend Pi like a happy Pi Day thing. And,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody mentioned Pi Moment or Pi Minute, which is it's two different ways to do it. It could be 1:15 in the, you know, either morning or afternoon, which would be 3.1415.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do Pi Moment, which is, it could be using military time, you know, 15 whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I kind of liked it. And I was like, ooh, Pi Day. And then I thought, oh man, I should eat pie on Pi Day. That would be funny, blah, blah, blah. This is a long time ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as Americans, we believe anything worth doing is worth overdoing.
Right? This is true.
And I think this was the first year that I had the same attitude that you just mentioned, which is it's completely jumped the shark.
Right? Yes.
The
yes.
only thing that made it cool to me was kind of like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. And I thought I was like the only, like I thought I had been let in on a secret, right? Now it's just annoying because to your yeah. point, people are now, I'll bet you 40% of the people that talk about Pi Day think it's really just about pie. Like, and they don't realize it.
Given the nationwide obesity epidemic, yeah. I'm going to say yes.
I would agree. And so I think I'm going to start boycotting Pi Day. However, starting next year, because I missed it this year, I will start celebrating E-Day.
This screams of social justice. I don't know if I I can back this up.
We just lost Woody. E-Day is... I'm going to have to look it up because it's hard for me to remember E. I think it's February 17th.
Okay.
But E is... there's something called a natural logarithm, and it's log base E. And it's very useful in mathematics. I don't remember much, but I will guarantee you this. And you guys, mark your calendars. Put a Facebook post so it comes up in your memories. On next year's show, next year on E-Day, I'm going to talk about E-Day. And I swear to God, it will never become popular for two reasons. Nobody knows what it is unless you took some college-level math. And B, there's nothing you can go, oh, E, I'm going to eat some E, right? No, there's no eat some E. Right? So I'm going to play an E note on the piano. I'm going to I'm gonna pop a Molly. Well, no, that's M Day, I think. It's E-Day.
Yeah, so
E-Day. So these girls are running around giving away their purses and hugging people.
we're gonna record on E-Day, and you're gonna have like a real soft product laden beard and a stocking cap.
Yes,
because you're gonna be so avant garde and so hipster with your E-Day.
I'll have that.
You're gonna suddenly have those hipster glasses.
It'll be a stocking cap that's kind of looks like. Looks like you've just been picked and then ain't fell off yet.
That's right.
And it'll have a brim. You know, have one of those, a bill, you yep. know, one of those stocking caps with a bill.
And somehow I'm going to be able to smell the patchouli that you're wearing.
I swear to God, the funniest thing I ever heard your brother say. Your brother, Bud, we were walking in Marquette Mall back when it used to be a thing.
Well, it was an actual mall, yeah.
Yeah, and I had just run into him. You know, I never went to the mall with your brother. Why would I do that? But anyway, I like ran into him or something. And he saw somebody he knew, a black dude from school, who was wearing a hat. And there was it was during the phase, and maybe they still do this, I'm not sure, but like his hat was just kind of like barely on top of his head, and it was all like droopy and everything. He goes, "Man, yeah. that looks like you just been picked, and that ain't fell off yet." I thought that guy was gonna pee his pants. He was laughing so hard, it was funny.
I think high school kids. White high school kids wear their hats like that now.
Ah, there's this guy at the Starbucks at 15th and Capitol here in Indianapolis. Nice guy, super nice, good customer service, works fast, very efficient, has one of those kinds of hats. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, man, people do this.
Is that like the uniform? I mean,
it could be.
Because if it's a coffee shop, that's probably his uniform.
Mm.
Change the channel, Marge.
The other thing of importance today is the passing of Stephen Hawking,
mm-hmm.
the everyman's physicist. He's like the blue collar dude. Here's what I don't get about him, and mm-hmm. it's probably one of the most impressive things about him is he became like a celebrity physicist.
Yeah.
While sitting in that wheelchair, and his head looks like it's like somebody put it on wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
His head is like, he gets up in the morning, it's like, oh, got to put your head on. And then they're just like, they're in a hurry. It's like, no, we got to leave the house right now. They're like, just put it up there, you know, let's go. And it's like off to the side a little bit. It's like on his like left shoulder.
Yeah.
He looks
yeah.
like Zaphod Beeblebrox in the really horrible version. In the TV version, where his head is basically a dummy head hanging off of his shoulder. Only if Zaphod lost his real head. Like
the one that actually talks.
The one that actually talks, and the rubber head, the prosthetic head's like left. You know, that's what he looked like. And when he smiles, I don't know how to describe that smile. But and he can't talk. And he became a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And kids will complain because they're like, I can never be famous. My chin's too big, or my butt's not big enough, or whatever, you know? It's like, look at this guy. How did he, I think it was that book.
The Brief History of Time?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's what did it.
I think that one broke, like you said, that one kind of brought it down, you know, for those of us that, you know, pretend to know what the fuck Pi Day is even about.
Yeah.
Can understand.
Well, seriously, that's kind of what got me interested in, well, I don't remember when that came out, so I can't really say that. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago the book called The Universe and Dr. Einstein, mm-hmm. which really explained relativity to me in a way I could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't long after that that I read A Brief History of Time, I would go back and read that. But mm-hmm. I swear to God, every damn person in the world is going to go read that. It's like when Prince
died. You're
going to
try to buy it on Amazon.
When Prince died, everybody's watching Purple Rain. Like, you never seen Purple Rain before, but everybody's watching Purple Rain because Prince died. Stephen Hawking's dead. He doesn't care if you read his book. He's dead.
Yeah, I used to have a copy of it. I don't know what ever happened. When we moved, back when I was still married, when we moved, I lost about 4 crates of books, and I'm pretty sure it was in that one of those 4 crates.
I do want to.
I'm not going to buy it again and have it be overpriced.
Well, I will say to our listeners, though, all seriousness aside, if you have not read A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, don't let his passing and the trendiness of reading that book get in your way. Go read it. It's great.
Yeah.
And it'll make a lot of stuff we talk about on this show make a little bit more sense.
You know, it's just. I had a thought.
I have a message for Superfan James. We can't let Paul talk a lot every show.
Yes, my talk well ran out.
Talk well.
No, I
it's like a
I had a,
is that a British a it's like a British librarian. Mr. Talkwell.
That's right.
Please come to the front desk.
Mr. Talkwell. he's a frequent guest on NPR.
This is Alistair Powards. I'm joined by Chesterfield Station and our very special guest. What's a good British name? Rodney. Rodney Talkwell. That's more South African. I don't know if that's British.
That's right.
Sir.
Rodney Talkwell.
Sir Rodney Talkwell joins us today. Everybody's that's a sir. It must be really easy to get a knighthood in England. It's like everybody, if you get famous, you get to be a knight.
Well, I think that's their way. I think that's their Hollywood.
Yeah. That having been said, go read that book, Brief History of Time. It's a good one. one of the best things I read today, and it was a comment on one of the news stories. So I didn't know this person. I don't even know if it's credible, but the words were great. And it talked about how when you die, you want a physicist speaking at your funeral, because they'll talk about the, you know, the laws of thermodynamics that say energy is not created nor can it be destroyed, which means your loved one,
yes,
your loved one's energy, you know, still exists in the universe. And they go on and on, like talking about how, like, every light particle that ever touched their face still exists, and still that energy still exists. And it goes on and on, and it goes, and you don't need to have faith. In fact, don't have faith. Scientists have proven this time and again. It is provable, it is demonstrable that energy cannot be destroyed. So, and I was like, wow.
See, that's exactly why I want you to speak at my funeral.
I will too, man.
Because I will, yes, absolutely that. If anybody ever asks me to speak at their funeral, I will bring that up.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, it's not a belief system. It's actually what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how, it's how science works, kids.
And people, you know? So here's the funny thing. People might go, oh, well, but wait a minute. Sometimes, you know, science says this, and then later on they find some other thing. And it's like, no, you're misunderstanding what you're hearing.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, exactly. One of the ones people might want to bring out is like Cartesian geometry. And they might go, well, you know, the Cartesian geometry, everybody thought everything was a straight line and this and that. And then we found out that space-time is curved. So that was wrong, right? It's like, no, it still works in the frame of reference that it was shown to work. Right. Mm-hmm. So somebody might say, well, someday we might discover that energy is created in the universe. And we'll go, not within the frame of reference that we have access to.
Right.
If somebody discovers energy is created in the universe or can be destroyed, it'll be some bizarre thing that we don't have access to right now. Right. But it won't change the fact and the provable, observable fact that based on what we can observe, no energy has ever been created or destroyed.
Right. And, you know, you were talking a little bit ago about Einstein and the theory of relativity and all that. I was explaining to my son today about that, because we were talking about the theory of relativity. That's one of the absolute beauties of physics is we talk on this show, we've talked in the past about like Occam's razor and stuff like that, and how even though it's a mathematical equation or a scientific equation, it can literally be applied to real life.
Yeah.
The same thing with, you know, I asked myself, you know what the theory of relativity is? Well, yeah, you know, time is relative. I'm like, yeah, but how does that apply to the real world, to your immediate surroundings? And what brought this subject up was we were talking about the weekend. Now, the weekend went by in a heartbeat for my kids. But for me, it took 2.5 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, see, right there. It's relative to the person living in it.
Yeah.
So it actually does apply. See, this stuff isn't just stuff you read in a book. It isn't just stuff that sounds cool. It really works, you know?
Absolutely. It's your frame of reference.
Yeah. Uncle Carl asked me the other day, he's like, because, you know, I'm coming up on my 50th birthday pretty soon. And he's like, you know, how does it feel as you're approaching 50? And I'm like, since my divorce, I don't subscribe to what most people think of as linear time. It's like, I don't subscribe to your linear time theory. You know, it's just crazy how this stuff that you can write on a piece of paper actually can apply. You know, same thing with Occam's razor. It's like, it's like what we were told in school back in the day. The most obvious answer is the answer.
Yeah.
The simplest answer is the answer.
So I saw this. Somebody commented it on one of the news stories about Stephen Hawking's death. But but I hope somebody... Well, the guy, Aaron Freeman. I'm not super familiar with who he is. I've heard that name, but he's a commentator, right? And he was on NPR, and he had some advice for planning your funeral. And this, to me, I think Stephen Hawking started to talk. Well, I think he was a Christian, and talked about God and how you can be a physicist and believe in God. And but I think in his heart of hearts, he probably would have certainly agreed with what Aaron Freeman says. And I'm going to go ahead and read that, and then we'll go to break.
Okay.
So Aaron Freeman, you want a physicist to speak at your funeral. You want the physicist to talk to your grieving family about the conservation of energy, so they will understand that your energy has not died. You want the physicist to remind your sobbing mother about the first law of thermodynamics, that no energy gets created in the universe and none is destroyed. You want your mother to know that all your energy, every vibration, every BTU of heat, every wave of every particle that was her beloved child remains with her in this world. You want the physicist to tell your weeping father that amid energies of the cosmos, you gave as good as you got. And at one point, you'd hope that the physicist would step down from the pulpit and walk to your brokenhearted spouse there in the pew and tell him or her that all the photons that ever bounced off your face, all the particles whose paths were interrupted by your smile, by the touch of your hair, hundreds of trillions of particles have raced off like children, their ways forever changed by you. And as your widow rocks in the arms of loving family, may the physicist let him or her know that all the photons that bounced from you were gathered in the particle detectors that are his or her eyes. That those photons created within her constellations of electromagnetically charged neurons whose energy will go on forever. And the physicist will remind the congregation of how much of all our energy is given off as heat. There may be a few fanning themselves with their programs as he says it. And he will tell them that the warmth that flowed through you in life is still here, still part of all that we are, even as we who mourn continue the heat of our own lives. And you'll want the physicist to explain to those who loved you that they need not have faith. Indeed, they should not have faith. Let them know that they can measure, that scientists have measured precisely the conservation of energy and found it accurate, verifiable, and consistent across space and time. You can hope your family will examine the evidence and satisfy themselves that the science is sound and that they'll be comforted to know your energy is still around. According to the law of conservation of energy, not a bit of you is gone. You're just less orderly.
I think what happened was aliens came down. They turned the monkeys into men. They taught them all this math. The monkeys made idols. And the aliens went, fuck it, and left.
And the aliens are like, they're making idols of us.
I honestly think that. That's why I think Arthur C. Clarke had it nailed down.
What about who created the aliens?
Other aliens. It's like dominoes.
Yeah. The pizza place?
No, on the way you slam your one down on the table.
Oh.
And all the other domino, when you got that one domino, it's going to win.
Yeah. Has there ever been a game or, you know, a game with a set of pieces that, like if you had a competition of games where the pieces are used for something other than their intended purpose? Like, is there anything that would win other than dominoes?
Cards, maybe.
Yeah.
We make
House of Cards.
But I think dominoes beats cards.
Dominoes beats cards. If you had a set of dominoes when you were a kid, you maybe spent 10% of the time playing actual dominoes and the rest of the time with that set of dominoes, setting them up and make them go upstairs and downstairs. And
I'm sure there are national competitions where dudes get together and they make a big house of cards.
Yeah.
But something tells me that watching that whole house of cards just fall down and the guy going, shit, versus having all these dominoes spill out and make like Mount Rushmore.
Has there ever been a house of cards built on That's Incredible or Real People? I doubt it. But they do that domino thing, right?
One of our listeners will post a link.
The oldest
next week.
What a friend we have in Ancient Astronaut. I almost feel, you know, we have at least one listener, probably more, who are Christian and devoutly so.
Yeah.
So when I read that, should not have faith, you know what I thought?
Hmm.
And this is not like trying to be conciliatory. This is the absolute truth. I thought, you know, if somebody does have faith in like God or something, I don't think Aaron Freeman was trying to say not to. I think what Aaron Freeman was saying is, you don't need faith to believe in the conservation of energy.
Right. It wasn't like he was going to, like, you know, get all up in their face at a funeral when they're crying.
You mean like the fundamentalist preachers do?
Yes. Well, it's like when you're at a funeral, regardless of how much you believe, you know, what your faith is, how strong it is, there's going to be that moment where you doubt every fucking thing. And if you don't, you're brain damaged. There's no possible way. You're dangerous. You're just, you have to question shit. That's the whole point of it. So in that moment of quote unquote weakness of your faith, let science step in and go, hey, you know, it's the same fucking thing. We just call it a different thing.
Yeah.
And I've actually had that conversation with people who were, you know, religious. And I'm like, you know, you like, because my take on the spirit world, for instance, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, they're into the whole ghosts and all that. And I call them ghosts and spirits and stuff in like definition of like, well, so you know what I'm talking about. I'm saying,
yeah,
there's a ghost. But what I'm really saying is it's another being from a parallel universe that crossed over into ours briefly, because I think there's points in where our universes basically convert, you know, cross over. So just because I'm calling it a creature from another dimension doesn't mean I'm insulting you calling it a ghost. Like a stink bug? Oh.
Well, I'm doing that thing they did in Stranger Things. Oh. It's not working. Sorry. Well, I mean, I've said this many times. If 200-300 years ago, probably sooner, like even more recent than that, but just to be on the safe side, 200-300 years ago, if you told somebody that the thing, in fact, I've heard stories about one doctor telling other doctors that the thing that's making people sick and dying is contamination from one person to the other person. These people have been put in insane asylums, and they
we did a show on that, our first Halloween show, I think.
And that guy didn't even know that it was microorganisms. He thought it was pieces of other people's flesh that was making other people sick. So if he had said it's tiny, tiny microorganisms similar to bugs, they wouldn't have waited like for him to die in the insane asylum. They would have burned him at a stake, right? But you see this phenomenon, you know, and you go, nah, it's got to be spiritual or God or some. We didn't do the right number of sacrifices or something. No. It's microorganisms, you know, that use you as a host, and they jump from you to that other guy. It's like, that makes no sense. Lo and behold, is it lo then behold or lo and behold?
I think it's and, but you can do then because it means the same thing.
It's like stop and shop. Is it stop and shop or stop then shop?
Well, yeah, because nobody goes behold then low.
Behold and low.
There is a chain of events.
That's our morning radio show. My name's Behold. Sitting right over there is Low. Hey, yeah, we're Behold and Low.
Well, we're holding low, all right.
Traffic and weather on the 12s and 8s. there's mattress in the left lane on the 405. Anyway, So you got people who observe. Now there's a big difference because the people observe like spirits and ghosts and stuff like that, but there's not a common like there are no serious people like widely showing that this phenomenon's taking place and we can't explain it, right? Like you can go to YouTube and find it. But almost always you can figure out, it's camera tricks, right?
Yeah.
There's never been on the news, other than that one possession story. Here's a chair moving on its own and nobody knows why, you know? But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Right.
Anyway, should we come back from the break?
I thought we were doing the new Halloween show.
Oh, right. Welcome back. Happy Pi Day, everybody. So, I understand there's been a little bit of a milestone in your household.
Yes. The baton, the torch has been passed.
I passed a baton once.
Oh, man.
Most painful experience of my life, man.
You gotta eat more broccoli, man. Drink more milk.
Have the surgery. Let them get in there and break it up. You do not want to pass a baton.
That's right. Or use that sonic vibration thing they do for kidney stones. You don't want to pass the whole baton.
And hey, it wasn't like a baton that they use in a relay race. It was like a baton like with the rubber stoppers on each end that the cheerleaders use.
That's right. And the worst part is when it comes out and there's one rubber stopper missing. Oh, that's going to be a while. But no. Recently, my son has been wanting to watch all the movies that Dad likes, and some of them. I mean, I'm easing them into him. Like, some of the scary movies because he's not a big horror fan. And like the other day, we watched 40-Year-Old Virgin, and. I forgot just how inappropriate that movie was.
Got the word virgin right in the title.
For a 14-year-old, but he enjoyed it. Because we watched Anchorman, and I'm like, all right, Anchorman, there's really not a whole lot more to 40-Year-Old Virgin than there is Anchorman. Oops. Yeah, there's a lot. But anyway, he enjoyed it. So the other day, we were talking about something, and he told me he wanted to watch Pootie Tang. And it was like that moment when your dad, you know, that moment you have with your dad where, like, you know, you express an interest in your dad's, like, what was your dad's big thing? you know.
Welding.
And if you went like, Dad, teach me to weld.
Yeah.
And he'd have been like, he'd have had you out in the shed, you know.
Yeah.
So we watched it, and I'm telling you, I was messaging you, and I'm like, he's dying over this whole thing. He's watching it going, why? Why, you know, why is this happening? But he's laughing the whole time, you know. Every once in a while, I would have to stop it and explain to him who certain actors and actresses, because this was 2001 when that movie came out, and didn't come out for very long. And I was explaining to him who Wanda Sykes was, and who he knew who Chris Rock was, because he's watched. Chris Rock was on that Seinfeld show where he drives around with a comedian and they get coffee.
I think that's what it's called.
It's something like that, yeah. And then I let him watch. Chris Rock has a new comedy special called Tambourine, which is well worth watching. And so he was interested when he found out Chris Rock was part of it, and he loved it. And when it was over, I was explaining to him. I'm like, now you know, there's a lot of guys out there. There's a lot of guys out there that would tell you everything they ever learned about life, they learned from The Godfather. And I told them, I said, that's complete bullshit. Mm-hmm. Everything you ever need to know about life is in Pootie Tang. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, when Daddy Tang tells little Pootie, you got to have respect to get respect, that's all you need to know about life.
Mama D, can I dang on some cherries? Yes, Pootie Tang.
And when Daddy Tang shows up and he's ear of corn, and like a stalk of corn, he's like, why? Why is he corn?
Oh, it's hilarious, man.
But when the movie was over, he's like, now I get half of what you talk about every day.
So today, it was yesterday. So we had another full day of lawsuit bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent a note out to some of the people I work with, like, I won't be in because I'm doing lawsuit. I have a legal thing I have to take care of. And one of the guys who I think he's one of our people. But it's hard to tell at work sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
But he sent me a note that said, would you get caught hooking again? And I replied back, just because a man likes to dress fancy and dance on a street corner, you automatically think he's hooking?
With some hose?
His reply was just, yes.
What's so funny about that brings something to mind is when I yesterday I took a picture of what we were watching and I put it on Facebook, and I was like, and it wasn't even on our page, it was on my page, how many people started chiming in about that movie. It's like, see, we're not the only ones. So many people think that's such a great movie and it was so underappreciated.
Well, here's the thing. It is the reason. Like, when I first started hearing Louis C.K.,
mm-hmm.
I thought, this guy's a genius. He's so funny, mm-hmm. right? And then I heard that he basically wants to disown Pootie Tang.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like him anymore. I don't like that. Well, I think, own it, dude. It's funny. A lot of people think it's offensive. Like, it's not, you know, when you're, you might not get invited to the right parties if you like Pootie Tang. It's like, so what?
Any party that doesn't want to invite me because I like Pootie Tang, I don't want to be a part of.
Right?
Now, on his show, though, because I thought Louis C.K. was a hysterical comedian. I love his stand-up. You know, he's, and I like his integrity because he got in trouble during all this, you know, when the wave of sex scandals popped up.
Yeah.
But he owned it. He apologized for it. He was articulate about it. I believe he was genuinely sincere about the whole thing. I still think he's a, you know, and he's the guy who has the quote about how we have all this wonderful stuff in the world and nobody's happy.
Yeah.
So then I found out, oh yeah, he's got a show. That show is, I absolutely hate his show. It's so, I mean, you want to yell at him. It's just like, shut up, stop being so stupid, and just, you know, go with the flow. But I only got into like the second half of the second season, and I had to stop. But what the reason why I'm saying this is for a little while, he was kind of sort of dating this girl.
Oh.
And this girl, there's a scene where they're at her house, and sure as shit, he's got Pootie Tang's belt buckle on. So I'm like,
he did or she did?
She did. She had it on. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, maybe he's owning up to it. Maybe he's like, you know, all right, it was a movie, you know, here it is. Well, that lady then goes on. I can't think of her name, which bugs me. But she goes on to make this really funny show called like something better, I think. Where she's like a single mom, she's got three daughters, and it's just her crazy life. I'm digressing, but it's a good show. But no,
I'm taking your picture.
I noticed. It drives me crazy because I think this chick is so fucking hot, but I can't think of what her name is. If only she were fat.
Well, I what more could be said about Pootie Tang that hasn't already been said?
Do you remember when we watched Pootie Tang? We got together because it was my bachelor party. And while we were waiting for everyone else to show up, because we went to a little tavern, we said, like, hey, Pootie Tang's on. What's this? I don't know. And it's got Chris Rock in it. It's got to be funny. And
I don't remember that. I must have been drunk already.
We were drinking heavily at that point.
I've probably seen it like three dozen times now. And so I don't remember the first time. But, oh, my God. What a funny movie. Everybody, go see it. In fact, go see it like it's out at the theaters. So go see it. And while you're out seeing movies, see Jaws as well and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message. I love you. Now back to our show.
Why don't we do some headlines? This one is from the Washington Post. Britain to expel 23 Russian diplomats after poisoning of ex-spy. Remember the day when you could poison a spy and nobody really said anything?
That was before the internet.
True. The other thing is, I was thinking about that particular headline is, when you're watching a movie about spies,
mm-hmm.
they will go anywhere in the world. You know, they'll pull up in a black van, open the door, shove somebody in it. They'll kill somebody. They'll mm-hmm. poison. All that happens. You never hear about the aftermath, right? But apparently in the real world, the interesting thing about it is the diplomatic reaction. Britain complained to the UN today about Russia trying to kill an ex-spy on UK soil. Like, how is that interesting? I want to hear more about how they did it.
Oh, don't worry. Tom Clancy will write an 8,000-page novel about it tomorrow. It'll be out. It'll be a bestseller tomorrow.
It is funny. There was a time when novelists had to keep their books short because of typesetting costs mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. binding costs and all that stuff. Now, not only is it easy to print the book, but a lot of times there's no printing to it. Like, I don't know what percentage of sales is ebooks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no limitation on how many words or pages Tom Clancy can put in a book. I don't like that.
No.
Because he's putting way too many pages in his books.
Well, he always was to begin with, but now it's, you know, it's excessive. It's like four times as much.
I remember when we were in high school, Carl was reading Dianetics, or no, not Dianetics. The other one by L. Ron Hubbard. Do you have another book? Anyway.
Yeah. that's unintentionally hysterical.
He had these super thick books that he was reading, and I was like, oh my God, that's the biggest book I've ever seen. It should be. And with the Bible, like if they printed the Bible on regular paper, do you think it would be that thick? I mean, but they printed on Bible paper, right?
Henceforth, never used again.
Yeah. How many times do you pick up a book and it's on Bible paper?
Well, I think what happened with the Bible paper industry is it went on to make zigzags because it has the same consistency.
Dude, man, we're out of papers.
Get a page out of the Bible.
Do you got a pipe? No, man, I broke my pipe. Shit. You got a Bible? Yeah, that's man. Right. Well, give me some Leviticus or something.
Give me some Ubiquitous.
Give me some Ubiquitous. Give me some cannabis. Cannabis 2. Well, the Gospel of Cannabis. So there you go. The other thing I noticed as I was looking for headlines was, want to be happy? Try moving to Finland. Well, if they don't speak English there, I'm not going to be very happy. That's all I have to say about that.
Finland. Doesn't Monty Python have a song about Finland?
I don't know.
I think they do.
It'd probably be really funny if we could think of what it was.
Yeah. This one's kind of falling flat.
Well, no, the Finlanders, I know two things about Finlanders. One, everybody in Minnesota likes to call, northern Minnesota, in that, what they call the Iron Range, because there was a lot of iron mining up there, iron ore mining. They call themselves Finlanders. Because apparently there was a time when you didn't want to move to Finland. You wanted to move from Finland. And they all settled in northern Minnesota because it looked a lot like Finland. Apparently.
That would be the only answer other than running out of gas.
There's jobs up there. My daughter asked me today, out of the blue, she looks over at me and goes, why do we live in Indiana? I was like, I'm going to need a little more context around your question. I mean, there's a lot of different answers depending on why you're asking. She goes, well, I just mean, you know, we don't really seem like Indiana people.
And this is your oldest?
My 13-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty astute.
Yeah. Well, because your Nana and Grandpa live here. Yeah, but why? So suddenly I had to go through the family tree and make up a few things. About why we're in Indiana. Because I was going to mention why I was born in Indiana. You know, the fruit truck breaking down. But anyway, the other thing I know about...
You need to tell that story. We've talked about your dad enough on the show. And even if we've brought it up before...
I'll tell it again.
Tell it again.
I love this story. People are like, why do you live... Why were you born in... Why is your family living in Michigan City? Clearly, your parents are from the South. I'm like, well... The fruit truck broke down. Like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you know, in the 1950s, there was not a lot of work in the South, in the Southern United States. In fact, between, you know, my dad used to say, I asked him one time because we were learning about the Depression in school, and I asked my dad, so you were born in 37, like toward the end of the Depression. Do you remember anything about the Depression? He goes, my whole life was the Depression.
That's one of my favorite stories by your dad.
I was like, okay. He's like, my family didn't know there was a Depression.
It was like, just Tuesday.
It's not like you could get more dirt poor during a Depression, right? And then when the Depression... You know, ended. It's not like suddenly we had money.
Like, no. Yeah, like, hey, here's the money you didn't have during the Depression.
Yeah, right.
Shows up with a suitcase.
Of course, nobody got out there to tell him about the New Deal and stuff. Although a lot of his uncles and stuff worked at, you know, Tennessee Valley Authority, which was a Work Progress Administration organization. But one of the things that did happen when he turned he got a little bit older, you know, working age, is...
Which is nine in Alabama.
Which is nine, yeah. Well, no, yeah. Oh, he was working from the moment he could walk.
I'm sure.
Out in the cotton fields. They were sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his mom... The only people that didn't have to work in the field was the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they had to do stuff at the house, but... So his mom... His dad died when he was like five. He fell off a truck and got run over. So his mom then took him to various cotton farms. And they'd go out there and they'd do what they call chopping cotton, which is like getting rid of the weeds. And then they would pick cotton when it came due, came harvest time.
Mm-hmm.
Each kid could make like $2 a day. And so the mom is like, well, I'll have a bunch of kids, you know, and put them to work and chopping and picking cotton. So anyway, when he turned 18, it's kind of like, this is not the life for me. And what a lot of, like Michigan had a lot of fruit farms, you know, apples, blueberries, other kinds of berries, and they needed labor to pick them because they didn't have the machinery to pick them.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there weren't enough Mexicans around. So, maybe it was because Cesar Chavez made it uneconomical. Oh, no, wait, we're talking about the 50s.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, so they would send down like trucks to the South and just go around saying, hey, get in this truck. We're going to Michigan. You can pick fruit and make money. Right. So my dad was like, I'll get on the truck.
I want to go to there.
I want to go to there. I want to, like one of my uncles had gone. He's like, I want to go to Michigan, pick fruit. I want what Brawley's got. Yeah. I have an uncle named Brawley.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his real name. It's his nickname. Brawley. Like, how do you come up with that nickname? Anyway, yeah. His real name
is that
real
a name. Is that a mathematical equation?
His real name is Junior. And you're like, oh, so he's named after his dad? No. No, his name is Junior.
Junior. His dad's Vincent. Name was Senior.
That's like some prophetic naming right there.
That's right.
I'm going to name you the third.
Yeah, like Zaphod Beeblebrox, the nothing.
So anyway, so my dad gets on his truck, and back in those days, it was, you know, from Alabama to Indiana now is like 8-9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Or to Michigan would be maybe 10.
Yeah.
Right? So he gets on the truck. It takes a couple, 2-3 days, right? They get to Michigan City, and the damn truck breaks down. And they're like, well, you know, it's like, this never happens now, but because we got China. But back then, it's like, oh, we don't have the parts. We can order them. They'll be here in a couple days.
Like, 2 weeks.
Guess we're stuck here for a couple days, right? So my dad hears somebody comes by and says, hey, the local factory's hiring. He's like, oh, so I could get a factory job. And they're like, yeah. So he goes over there, fills out an application, starts work that day.
What kills me is like about that story, because that story is legendary in Springfield Township. Everybody knows that story. And what kills me about that is he goes, oh, I'll get a job over there. Now, where are you going to stay? Fuck, I don't know. I'll make it up. You know, yeah. I'll stay over here. You know, now it's like when we move from place to place, we have to have, you know, we have our job lined up.
Yeah.
We bought the house. You know, everything is ready to go. The movers have all the stuff in the truck. But it's just like your dad gets off this broke ass, bumpy ass truck and goes, wait, they're hiring? Okay, I'll take that money. Now, where are you going to live? Fuck, I don't know. I'll live over there for a little while. Then I'll live over there.
Yeah, I'll stay with somebody. There's always somebody you can stay with, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, and you know, he had a bunch of different jobs in Michigan City. If he got mad at the boss one day, he'd just quit.
See,
that's take the rest wonderful. Of the day off and then go to another factory and say, y'all doing any hiring? Yeah, come on in. We're doing some hiring.
No, that's great, though, because now that we give young people, by we, I don't mean us, we give young people so much shit for quitting work.
Yeah.
Oh, Snowflake, you don't want to work for that guy. Well, no, because I think I'm worth more than that. Yeah. And here's your dad. Nope, you know, this person doesn't work well with him. It doesn't work well for him, so he quits and moves on to somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the worst pieces of advice that our society gives kids these days. It's like, oh no, you don't want job hopping to come up on your resume. And I'm like, bullshit. If you have a good reason, don't like a situation, just get out of it if you can do it.
Well, my brother and I were talking about that, the same one who has the famous quote. If you're working in a factory or any position where you're getting treated like shit, you're getting paid shit, and you work there for 12 years before you go find something else, and you put this 12-year shit on your resume, you know what that makes you look like? A sucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've told my daughter is about to enter the work field, and I gave her my two pieces of advice on working, and they are, when you sign a piece of paper, you're putting your name on a contract to say, I agree to do this, and my name means this much. You know, it means, by putting my name on this, I am saying that I will work for you. That's one piece. So in other words, always bring your A game.
Yeah.
Conversely, my other piece of advice is, you're a human being. If you're being treated like shit, get out. You deserve better than that. And my example was her grandma Karen, who's a dear friend of mine. Little, very, very small woman. But she's a honey badger. I watched her rip into our boss because we worked together, and he's taller than I am. And she's like, you know, I'm a human being. I don't deserve to be treated like this. And in the 3 years I worked there, I never once saw him even apologize for anything, but he apologized to her. And I use that as an example. I'm like, you are a human being. You deserve to be treated like a human being, not a piece of shit. So there's going to come a time in your job where you're going to wonder, you know, is it worth sticking around for? Ask yourself if it works for you. If it doesn't, quit. Find something. You didn't have that. You were unemployed when you found that job. You'll find another one.
That's great advice. And for our younger listeners, so my advice is like, it's like experimental acid jazz, right? Everybody pretends it's important and like it's something that people should listen to, but nobody fucking listens.
Kind of right? Like Sonic Youth.
Yeah. It's like people like the idea of listening,
yeah,
but they never really fucking listen. But here's what I'd say. And here's the reason I'm absolutely not credible to give this advice, because I have not done it. But, you know, don't do what I did. Don't listen to old people and go, ah, what does that old codger know? If you could set yourself up financially, and by set yourself up financially, I don't mean pile up a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I mean, set up your life so that you're doing shit you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people around you like having around you, and you're comfortable, and have a lot of money left over after you've done all that, so that when you're in a job you hate, you can leave.
Mm-hmm.
And go, look, I've got 6 months before I need to start having income again.
Yes. Yeah.
So fuck off. Right. That's yeah. The power. The only thing that allows bosses to treat people like shit is that power that comes with, what are you going to do? You're going to quit. You're living paycheck to paycheck. What are you going to do? Quit? But if you're not living paycheck to paycheck, and the only way to do that is to spend a lot less than you make, and that has to start early.
That's my thing with my kids. I'm trying to get them focused on that.
We've done a horrible job with our kids of that, right? Our kids have no concept, right? However, this whole lawsuit thing, and me quitting the Bloomington job because it was killing me, and taking a lot less money in the job I'm doing now, is a huge blessing in disguise. And I don't mean a blessing like a God, Jesus thing. I mean blessing like a good thing that I didn't ask for.
Yeah.
Because we had this conversation with them the other day about what things are going to be like over the coming year or two.
Yes.
And there were tears, right?
Yeah.
And they're going, because they go to a private school, and it's a struggle now. It wasn't when we first sent them, but it is now. and a lot of the kids at their school, money's not, you know, they have horses, they have every spring break, they're going off to Europe or somewhere, you know? And so we're having those conversations like, it's really hard to be around those other kids when we talk about spring break and they're, you know, where are you going for spring break? Yes. Oh, I'm going to France. And we don't have the money to do it. And we can't get a pool and I don't have any horses and all this stuff. And I'm like, in a way, for the long-term benefit of our kids, thank God we're going through this right now. Now, I don't mean God as in an omniscient being. I mean, figure of speech God.
Oh, or as energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the long run, because we have similar things on a slightly different level here. And in the long run, it's your kids are going to be able... Your kids are not going to be those kids that are, like, spoiled rotten.
Yeah.
So they don't understand and they, you know, they're just ruined. And I think in the long run, like you said, in the long run, it's going to help them.
Yeah. Now, I think they can learn all they need to learn about responsible money management in the next 12 months. So what I want to put out in the universe is we don't need this to last 5 or 10 years. 12 months, you know, if we could like be emerging from this, what Constance and I said we were going to get Phoenix tattoos on our arm. Or she keeps posting this thing that says they tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds.
Yeah, so I read that. I thought that was wonderful.
She's like, maybe we should get seedling tattoos. I'm like, dude, Phoenix, no way am I getting a friggin' what? Unless it's Daddy Tang as a stalk of corn, I'm not getting a plant tattoo.
You need Daddy Tang as a stalk of corn on your back. Just a big spread, you know, like something like Danny Trejo would have.
Oh, what was our Trejo the Clown? Anyway, all right. Well, that was a long, irresponsibly interpreted headline. I don't even remember which one it was.
What was it? Oh, Booty Tang. That's the longest preview I've ever watched.
I'm a sign of pity on the running kind.
What a time.
Let's talk about Black Lightning. We pray at night for the helpless. Pray at night. Hoping you get us through breakfast. Hoping. Wishing somebody come save us.
Black Lightning's back. Come to shock the haters. Black Lightning's back. I love that his phone will ring and he's like, He can tell by the caller ID. He's like, hello. Like, I would never be good at that. Because it'd be that cop calling me. I'd be like, hello, this is Steve. He'd be like, what? I'd be like, damn it. Or, you know, like you would call. I'd be like, hello. You're like, come on, man.
But
it's me.
Well, you would know, I mean, as the daughter pointed out, you know, he calls him on that weak-ass phone.
First of all, they did it again.
Black Lightning did it again.
So I was complaining about those guns, right? And they answered my question in the very next episode.
Like I told you last week, give the show time. It'll explain stuff.
And not only was it, so it didn't at all, and it wasn't, it didn't feel like this because it wasn't this. It wasn't a, oh shit, now we got to explain the guns. No, it was like, it's an important thing that the guns had a nuclear, like nuclear power, that they were nuclear powered. I don't know what to say. Kim Jong-un would. But anyway, the fact that it wasn't like, I'm repeating myself, but it wasn't, oh, we got to explain the guns. Oh, they could be nuclear powered. No, it was like, this is an important plot device. It's not even a MacGuffin.
Right. Well, as I explained to my son, because we were watching it earlier today, and I told him, I'm like, well, we're talking about the guns. And I was explaining to him, I said, now, Steve, for some reason, I don't know why, but he's not a comic guy. I don't know where I went wrong with him. So he doesn't understand that things will happen in comics, and you just go, yep, and you turn the page. But this show isn't like that. This show, from the very beginning, this show has dropped you right in the middle of it. Yep. And then explained things.
Yep.
And I knew, hoped, they wouldn't just be like, yeah, they were guns, we used them. But no, they actually explained your gun problem. And I was just like, I was giddy the whole time when they were doing that. I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. Because, you know, Steve's sitting there going, well, okay then.
Well, okay then. It was good. Constance was watching with me this time. Mind you, she hasn't watched an episode yet. This was her first one. So there was a lot of, okay, wait till the next commercial and I'll explain to you what's going on. Right?
Like God bless Hulu, or not Hulu. God bless the CW for that.
Yeah.
A commercial will pop up and then we'll explain it.
It took me a second, like with LaWanda, whatever her name is. Like even I was kind of like, I don't know what's going on here. But then I like started, I was like, oh yeah, he in Lala. And I'm just going, wow, man, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And then we find out about Gambi.
I was right. I'm just throwing that out there. Without ruining it for your brother, I was right.
The both ends against the middle?
Both ends against the middle, and I was holding out for him as being a good person, and it's without ruining it for your brother.
Mike.
Yeah, hurry up and catch up. It's called binge watching.
Yeah, come on. You know what binging is. Just apply it to watching. Yeah, so a lot of information is revealed in this week's show. Are they on hiatus again, or are they going to
have a few more episodes? They're still going.
Okay.
And what I love about this, it's the same thing I loved about the Marvel's Luke Cage series. It's a short season because it was a mid-season show, which means, if you don't know what that is, most seasons start at a certain time and go for 18 episodes. This one starts late in the season and probably runs for maybe 12, 13 episodes. Which means it doesn't have those 4 or 5 episodes that are fluff. Now, your typical TV series season will pad the season with episodes, but we call them disposable episodes. It's like some stuff happens, it's entertaining, but it really doesn't advance the plot anywhere. I call them fluff. With a short season, with a mid-season replacement show, whatever you want to call it, there's no room for fluff. Every single episode is pertinent to the plot. Even this episode, which, if you noticed, was a departure from the rest of them in that it was very subtle. There was no major, like, there was no, like, kick-ass Isaac Hayes music while Black Lightning was, like, electrifying guys. It was just a lot of stuff got revealed. It was very low-key, but all of it was advanced the plot.
Yeah, it was sort of like we got some business to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take care of some business, get everything caught up. And it's that moment where you go, well, it's kind of like, you know, we talked a lot about Stranger Things and you know, the way that when you're watching the first few episodes, it would be easy to go, oh, I know what this show's about, but there's some weird stuff going on, but you know, this is one of those coming of age, whatever. Oh, holy shit. Did that just happen?
Yeah.
Like, wait, is somebody dreaming? Maybe it's a dream. And then you go, well, it's probably a dream sequence. Okay. I'll just wait for somebody to wake up. They're not waking up. Hang on. And it's sort of like that where you go, at some point you realize I liked the show before, but this is a completely different show than I thought.
Yeah.
And I'm that way with Black Lightning. Like, the more I see, the more I go, I was good with it before because I thought it was like on this level.
Yeah.
But now I'm realizing there's this whole like catacombs of Egypt level beneath it, you know?
Yeah. Every single episode builds to somewhere and reveals stuff from the past to flesh out the entire story. Now, is it just me, though, or does Lala remind you of, like, Charlie Murphy in a tracksuit?
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm good with that analogy. That's good. That's a good one. It's getting good. You know, I think they, I don't know if this happened this way, but do you think that one of the reasons the CW wanted to greenlight Black Lightning is they knew Black Panther was coming and they kind of wanted to play off of the popularity of Black, because Black Panther is way more popular than Black Lightning right now, just because it's a blockbuster movie.
Well,
right?
Large screen, small screen. I'm going to put them in two different categories. I think they're equally popular in their own genre of entertainment. But to answer your question, yes. For the same reason that, not coincidentally, Tony Isabella's new Black Lightning series came out about the same time that the first episode of Black Lightning, the TV show, popped up.
Yeah.
But that tells me, though, that they knew. Now, when you're doing a comic, here's the thing a lot of people don't know about comics. They don't just grow on trees.
They don't?
They take months of planning to put just the idea together, the story together, the first couple of issues together. So, way back when, say 6 months ago, DC Comics knew that the Marvel's Black Panther series was going to explode. They timed out the TV show with it, and the comic with the TV show. The whole thing is beautifully orchestrated.
It's how you engineer a hit.
Or if you're Pootie Tang, just turn the volume down, the music down. That's how you get a hit.
Pootie done did it again.
He don't need no music. He don't need no words. This episode is basically fast-tracking to some sort of finale. I mean, it's going to be a blowout. I mean, we learned everything you wanted to know about Gambi was answered today.
Yeah.
The relationship between Black Lightning and Gambi has been pushed to the near breaking point. The younger sister had her moment.
Yep.
The voluptuous Lynn Stewart just walks around, and I don't care what she does. She can, you know.
Being beautiful.
That's right. Being beautiful.
She's a beautiful, strong, proud, black, African-American woman of color. I got to say that about her.
Yeah, you can keep talking.
Yeah, I think one of the things I love about there are a lot of things I don't like about the way Hollywood works, but one of the things that I think they kind of get right, sort of, is the people that produce Black Lightning really, really want another season. Because it's job security, right?
Yes.
And so they're going to build up to a finale that is exciting and wonderful to watch, but it's going to leave a lot of threads, you know, for the next season. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's going to make it so that you go, oh, I really want to watch next season. At the same time, they know their fan base and they know they can't leave certain questions unanswered.
Right.
Otherwise, the fan base is just going to go, I don't even know what the hell's going on. So fuck it. Right. So they got to answer, what is this universe all about? Like, we were okay starting the season with people not really understanding the universe. But by the time we get to the end of the first season, we have two jobs. One, we have to explain the universe. And two, that universe has to be so compelling that you want to now see characters living in that universe.
Yeah.
And it's what I was talking about with Man in the High Castle. First season was, you didn't know what was going on. They revealed the universe over the course of the first season. Mm-hmm. Second season is just characters living in that universe.
Yes. You've established all the hooks. You've got all of the nuances of that universe. You've explained enough of it to make it interesting to me to keep finding out what's happening. So now, season two, you can't just keep doing that. You have to move forward on the plot. All the characters are established. Now let's move forward.
Yeah.
The thing I hope for with this series, and is, to the best of my knowledge, it's doing well, that there will be a second season, is I'm hoping they keep season two a short season as well.
Mm.
For two reasons. One is, then you don't have all the fluff.
Yeah.
Also, by keeping a short season, you can concentrate the production cost.
Yeah.
And give us special effects along with story.
I don't see how we're going to do any better than that. Well, this has been an amazing conversation about Black Lightning. So, hey, you know, thank you. By the way, let's acknowledge our listeners for really jumping on the Put It On The Page.
Yes.
Hashtag Put It On The Page has been, I think, quite a hit.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we've gotten a lot of fans of the page, and I assume fans of the show, posting stuff on, putting it on the page.
Yeah.
And I want to see more fans put stuff on the page.
Put it on the page.
Don't feel like, well, these guys are the ones that are running the show. Nobody's running this show. This show is running itself.
If you've listened to more than one episode of the show, you realize nobody's running the show.
This show is like Killdozer. It's going by itself. Just
possessed.
We're the car. We're Killdozer. We're Christine. We're running ourselves. It's running itself.
That's right.
Put it on the page.
Yeah, put it on the page. Also, got to walk before you can run, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's get good with the put it on the page thing. But just so you know what's coming next, it's going to be the share the page with other people. And then at some point, share the show with other people. But don't do it right now. I don't want you to bite off more than you can chew. Just put it on the page.
Hashtag share the page.
Share the page. That'll be the next one.
That's right.
And it's so funny and a little bit ironic that it's not even a page. It's a group.
Well, when I initially wrote out hashtag put it on the group, it didn't look as good as put it on the page.
I like put it on the page.
It flows better, I think. Yeah, so hashtag share the page, share the group, hashtag share the show. There you go. Hashtag share the show.
Okay, well, you know what? We appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sharing with a friend. And more than anything, we appreciate you being our friend. That having been said, for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Benson, and nothing, just heard, was true.
It's true. Whoa, booty tang, you're gonna sign that booty booty tang. You gotta sign my booty booty tang. You gonna, you gotta, you gonna, you gotta.
gonna sign your pity on the running kind. I'm gonna sign your kitty on the Sepitan.
If you're selling drugs to his dang baby, if you're hurting the children or his brothers, he's gonna whip off his booty belt and take it to your drug selling honey.
You got to have respect to get respect, Pootie Tang.